Welcome back to EV News Daily. On the podcast today, GTX versions of the ID3 and the ID7 arrive. Polestar 3 gets some discounts in the US. And is Fisker on the brink? We'll find out. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you what the United States are doing to get more EV trucks on the road. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you are in the world, EV News Daily is your trusted source of EV information for Thursday, 14th of March. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story every day, so you don't have to. It's the service I provide. Hopefully in 20, 30 minutes, you're fully up to speed. And we go live at 5 p.m. UK. That's midday Eastern every day. Patreon supporters get the episodes as soon as they're ready and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. We'll start with news of not one, not two, but technically three car launches yesterday. Volkswagen introduced the ID3 GTX, a performance version of that, and the ID7 GTX estate or touring version. That's very sweet. Let's get into it. We'll start with the ID3 GTX. Now, the new ID3 GTX is a hot hatch with 282 horsepower. That's upgrading to 322 in the performance variant. The ID3 GTX, the performance version being the faster of the two, does a 0-62 time, that's a 0-100 kph, in 5.6 seconds. That makes it VW's fastest ever EV in terms of pure outright acceleration to date. Steering in the ID3 GTX has been refined for sharper precision, mirroring the enhancements akin to a Golf GTI performance. The performance version includes advanced dynamic chassis control, DCC, for improved ride and handling by monitoring the wheel movement. There's battery capacity increases as well for the GTX in the ID3, going from 77 kilowatt hours net, that's usable, a small bump from 77 to 79. And we can see some styling details on the outside as well, some trim details that'll set it apart. And you can tell it's one of the vehicles that's a little bit spicier. Now, in terms of range, 373 is the number we need to look for. That's WLTP, of course. That'll be less on EPA, but this won't be a US car, so I guess that is a little bit academic anyway. The larger battery supports DC fast charging up to 175 kilowatts now, not 170. So that means you can go to 80% charge in just 26 minutes. Now, Volkswagen estimates the ID3 GTX on the WLTP test cycle for the standard version being 339 miles. And so, with a 77 kilowatt hour battery. So a small bump in kilowatt hours just by a couple, but a big bump in range. And obviously though, both of those figures significantly, you know, outdistance the entry level pack, which is 58 kilowatt hours, and that'll do 264 miles. So bit of a bump in battery, but otherwise we can tell from those figures, from that jump of 339 miles up to what it is now, which is 373. That's not just battery pack size alone, that is other efficiencies. That's the new AP550 motor, which they've put, of course, on the rear axle. Inside, we've got some sports seats straight out of a Golf GTI with some red stitching, and it looks very, very nice inside. New steering wheel inside it as well, and it's got the new improved screens for the ID3 as well. So not as big as the ID7, but a bump in screen size, and certainly bringing this car up to being a proper competitor in terms of an equivalent for the GTI spec, if you like. Now, we were promised an all-wheel drive version of this, and there's just no room in the ID3. I mentioned this yesterday, to put dual motors. And so, still, that's a lot of horsepower, a lot of power for a single rear motor. Let's get on to the ID7. Well, firstly, elephant in the room, the ID7 is the estate version, the Tourer, the GTX Tourer. So that is already a very cool thing that they're not showing off a fastback version. They're showing off the version that's going to do, you know, pound out the motorway miles on the German Autobahn. Really cool. GTX version of the ID7 equipped with all-wheel drive, so dual motor on this one. So that is a significant increase, again, of 40 kilowatts or 53 horsepower over the top version of the previous ID7 model. And so that uses a bigger battery on the ID7. We knew that already. It's an 86 kilowatt hour, consistent with the ID7 Tourer Pro S. You get that right. But now with this GTX badging, and it's got some, again, some spicier motors. A rear permanent magnet synchronous motor delivering 210 kilowatts, that's 281 horsepower, on the rear axle. Front asynchronous motor with 80 kilowatts, 107 horsepower, much smaller on the front axle. And so rear wheel bias on this, and a total of 335 horsepower. Similar to what we talked about with the ID3, but this time with the dual motor setup. Inside, this car has got the bigger screen, which looks really cool. So whereas the ID3 has the 12.3-inch screen, this has got the 15-inch display from the ID7, and it just looks so good with the red stitching, the new software arriving as well. ID7 GTX Tourer has the big capacity, 1,714 litres of cargo capacity, same as the non-GTX versions, but I thought I'd mention it. There's no extra, you know, batteries taking up the space or anything like that. So in terms of the interior, yeah, we've still got the capacitive buttons on the steering wheel until we get the next version of the ID cars to when we go back to clicky buttons. Please let us go back to clicky buttons so you can feel your way around the steering wheel and not have to take your eyes off the road or not brush them with your palm and all that kind of stuff. This was a silly phase that a lot of car makers went through with these buttons. But otherwise, inside, lots of upgrades, latest software, advanced augmented reality, head-up display, wireless compatibility with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, dual-zone climate. It's got the IDA voice assistant with ChatGPT. There's a really improved battery conditioning with these cars now and this latest software in the ID cars. And if you haven't seen it, I'll try and describe it really quickly. And that is when you navigate to a charger, a DC fast charger, it will tell you, when you arrive at the charger, we think that this car will peak at 130 kilowatts, say. If you enable battery preconditioning and use up some extra energy on the way there, we think that you could charge at 175 kilowatts because we'll warm the battery. And so that's really cool. When you see it in action, it's actually very, very cool. And it's just one of the most beautiful implementations of battery preconditioning that I've seen. Now, pricing, unconfirmed. I would suggest GTX starting at 45 grand for the ID3 and 60 grand for the ID7 Tourer. I don't know, my suggestions. Let me know your thoughts in the comments below after you've hit the subscribe button, of course, if you're watching the YouTube version of this, so that you can always be notified of when we go live at 5 p.m. UK midday Eastern every single day. Leave a comment as well. Let me know what you think about these vehicles and whether, if you're not getting them in your country where you are around the world, whether you'd like these. So Polestar gets some price reductions in the US before it's even really on sale. And the 2025 model year Polestar 3 has been introduced with starting prices significantly lower than the previous year, the previous pricing. It now begins at $74,800. That includes the $1,400 destination fee. And it introduces a new base model. So there's four models to pick from now. And having recently bought a Polestar 2, I've been getting my head around Pilot Pack and Plus Pack, and the two names they give them. Let's have a look at the Polestar 3. And again, as a Polestar owner now, I'm sort of fully signed up on the Scandi color pack and things like that, and the interior, the exterior. Really, really enjoying it, actually, and loving the Polestar 3 and Polestar 4. Polestar 5 coming soon as well. So this model year in the US features the new base model, and that is the long-range dual motor. So big battery, two motors, long-range dual motor with the Pilot Pack. That features the advanced ADAS systems, like Pilot Assist and the head-up display. The long-range dual motor with Pilot and Plus Pack. So you couldn't decontent it before. It was previously the base model. That is now 80,000, whereas you can get into the Polestar 3 now from 74,800. And that is, you know, even that, the long-range dual motor with Pilot and Plus, that's a $5,000 discount on previously, and that includes the big boy 25-speaker Bowers & Wilkins audio system, the wool seats and everything else. The Performance Pack variant starts, again, you can just spec if you want, just Performance Pack for $80,000 with the option to then add the Plus Pack on top, and you can take the car all the way up to, if you completely go, you know, the top of the four, if you like, with the Plus and the Pilot Pack, $86,000. That's a $5,000 discount from the previous model year. That has the 517 horsepower, 671 pound-feet of torque, improved suspension, unique design elements like the 22-inch forged wheels and gold accents. Acceleration 0 to 60 is 4.7 seconds. Federal tax credit on this? I don't think so. Not made in the US. It's made in China for now, but by the summer, they'll be making these in South Carolina, so it could well get the tax credit if all the stars line up and the battery bits are all right. But of course, you can get access to that discount by leasing the vehicle, and you can configure on Polestar's website now. BYD sat down with the publication Automotive News at the Geneva Motor Show and talked more about their targets for Europe, and they don't seem to be daunted at all by how much they want world domination. BYD is targeting a 5% share of the European EV market, aiming for sales of 70,000 all-electric vehicles this year, including plug-in hybrids in the offering would take that to about 125,000 vehicles. Last year, BYD sales in Europe were under 16,000 all-electric vehicles, though. So to go from 16 to 70, if you're talking pure BEVs, it was a 1.1 market share, aiming for a 5 market share. If they do that this year or not, you can't deny that their goals are lofty, and I wouldn't bet against them. The expansion strategy was shared by the European CEO Michael Hsu in a discussion with Automotive News Europe. I'll pop a link to that story in the show notes, and all of today's stories in the show notes if you'd like to find out more, and if you want to listen to this show as an audio podcast, if you're watching the YouTube version, for instance. It's so easy to do. Open your podcast player, your app, your favourite one, and just type in EV News Daily. And there's a couple of thousand episodes in the archive to fill your boots with. But if you want the new shows each day, get them straight into your ears in audio form. And of course, you can always tune in to the YouTube version as well. Why not do both? Well, here's news that we don't like to report on, but news coming into the podcast today that Fisker is exploring bankruptcy options and has enlisted the help of restructuring advisors, financial consulting firm FTI Consulting, the legal firm Davis Polk, are both guiding Fisker through the process that they are about to enter into. The company recently acknowledged risks on their earnings call about the ongoing operations, job reductions, and halted investments in new ventures. Nissan, though, as I reported on this podcast only last week, Nissan is said to be in detailed discussions to potentially invest in Fisker, a move that would give the carmaker entry into the electric pickup market, or maybe they're talking about an acquisition, perhaps. Well, let's hope that bankruptcy is not on the cards for this company. Trying it all over again, second time around. I love the design of these vehicles. They have been, if not plagued by problems, the software has let them down, and it's definitely a work in progress. They've not been able to capture that thing that Musk was so clever with Tesla of creating a groundswell of fandom behind the company, that when those vehicles arrived from Tesla that weren't ready, the fans love the vehicle so much, and it is a cliche, but I stick by this cliche. It's amazing. You meet Tesla owners, especially some early doors Tesla owners, back in the day, and they'd go, well, you know, the whole sort of legendary panel gaps thing, that's, you know, that is kind of true, and there's overspray here, the paint job is terrible, oh, and the seats, so this is bad, and the steering wheel's falling apart. This is the best car I've ever owned. And it's and they were able to do that. I'm still not quite sure how, just by making, I think, you know, very, very good products, but in some regards, in terms of the engineering of them, and were just redefining the Model S, Model X, redefining what a car could do in terms of electric forms. But Fisker have been able to capture that same level of sort of brand loyalty, if you like, or fanaticism from the early fans who have been very vocal about this car isn't ready and the software isn't ready. It doesn't help with the likes of Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, with his autofocus channel. He's got 20 million subscribers on his main channel, describing it as the worst car he's ever reviewed. Company definitely up against it. We wish him the best. Hey, mentioned Tesla, so we'll stay with them. And Tesla's begun enforcing its policy against Cybertruck resellers. Sort of. I saw a lot of coverage in the last 24 hours of, you know, Tesla cracks down on those reselling the Cybertruck, but really, they half are. Let me explain my opinion on this. They've revoked those owners' ability to order future Teslas or reserve future vehicles, and that's absolutely Tesla's right to do business with whom they want, and if they want to bar you from buying any more vehicles directly from the company, you can go buy one on the used market if you want to drive a Tesla. This is aimed at the people who have bought a Cybertruck and have put it through auction and made $100,000, $120,000, $135,000 profit. It is said that in the contract to buy a Cybertruck, you cannot flip it, and there's a clause opening you up to a lawsuit of $50,000. So you could take the argument of, you know what, I'll see Tesla in court. If they really want to fight it all the way through, and it is a slam dunk legal argument, you have your 50, I've still got my 75 profit, and I'm still up a nice big chunk of change for selling the Cybertruck. You could argue that. Now, that's not what's happening here. So again, I've seen a lot of media coverage today saying, ah, Tesla are going after those people who are flipping the Cybertruck. They're not. All they're doing is saying, you can't buy another Tesla. Although that is a significant piece of the story, because it turns out some of these people they're barring, who've gone on the forums to complain about it or just tell their story, had 20 or 25, one of them 30 reservations, and they've got their money with Tesla, of course, for a long time, though, for a Cybertruck. What is one person doing with that many reservations? Oh, and by the way, I'm always being told, yeah, there's 2 million people that want a Cybertruck. It's going to be the biggest vehicle in the world. There's not. They've never told us how many there are, and a lot of people have multiple reservations. But what's an individual doing with 30 reservations? They're only ever going to use it to flip those vehicles, to buy and sell them. So there's nothing wrong with Tesla, in my opinion, of course, saying, no, thank you. We're no longer doing business with you, or you don't want your money in the future. Those people are quids in. So they've sold their vehicles. They're not being sued at the moment. They got the money in the bank. So is it a real hardship? They've made their money. Now they can go off into the sunset. And I've said last week on the podcast, it's a moral argument, I know, but these people really annoy me, because the Cybertruck is a very cool new vehicle. And if you are one of the first people to get one, just drive it. Just let your friends drive it. Just have it. Just enjoy it. You got a cool thing ahead of hundreds of, let's say hundreds of thousands of other people, if not 2 million. You got your truck, go and have fun with it. What have you got to sell it for? You're kind of spoiling the fun. But hey, everyone can do with any of their things that they own, whatever they want. So they do them. I wouldn't, but there we go. And I'll pop a link to that story in the show notes if you'd like to find out more. Shall we talk EV trucking? Well, the Biden administration, news coming into the podcast via the Green Car Reports website. I saw this, that they've unveiled a strategy to establish EV charging stations along key US freight corridors. Well, a significant statistic that caught my eye, I've seen this before in various forms, is that 75% of heavy truck traffic occurs on just 4% of US roads. There are certain roads in the US that just deliver the goods that keep normal life, day-to-day life, ticking over with the products, the food, the supplies that we need. And so if we can electrify those routes and those trucks, then we do it really quickly. And I've also seen the stats as well, that there's a minority of heavy truck commercial vehicles that cause nearly all of the really bad air pollution. So if we can do those vehicles first, less pressure to do the rest of the vehicles on the road. Either way, the plan, named the National Zero Emission Freight Corridor Strategy, catchy, involves collaborations between the Joint Office of Energy and Transportation, the Department of Energy, Department of Transport, and the EPA. It will support the transition to EV trucking with medium-duty and heavy-duty trucks in four different phases. The first one we're in right now is to set up hubs for EV charging. Then there's phase two to link them up, phase three to expand them, phase four to further extend the network to achieve comprehensive national infrastructure. Well, one of the arguments against driving electric vehicles from those that, I don't know, just love breathing in disgust and air, I suppose, these people that just love to give other people lung cancer, I guess, the people who hate electric vehicles, for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe they need to see a therapist or something, they argue, oh, well, your electric vehicle is just moving the emissions from the tailpipe to the power station. Well, there's lots of reasons why that's all wrong from these people. For instance, power stations are far more efficient than a small internal combustion engine, so actually making the electricity at a power station is actually far more efficient, but we won't get into that because the grids are cleaning up. So as the grid cleans up, every EV gets cleaner. Now, I drive my EV in the summertime nearly all of the time on solar from my roof. And so, yeah, I know, like, smug middle-class person with solar panels and the battery, I get it. But still, that is one of the things that's a bonus about driving an EV. It's really cheap for me to do. And there's lots of issues around how I need to get EVs into the hands of people on lower incomes. And that is all valid argument. But the argument about, well, if you drive an EV, you're just moving the emissions to somewhere else. And you see these themes online from the tinfoil hatters. Well, There's a really interesting stat that came across my desk earlier today. California just achieved a groundbreaking renewable energy feat by supplying 100% of California's grid, that's wind, water, solar, for several hours in four consecutive days. Now, the achievement marks the first time that California has surpassed 100% renewables on a weekday and repeated it again and again and again. The state is set for a record of maintaining this level of renewable energy production for four straight days in a row. Happened last Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for between 2 and almost 5 hours, hitting between 102 and 100% of the grid's energy needs with just pure renewables. Everyone driving their EV or who were charging their EV in that time, surprise, surprise, they were doing it on clean, green power. One of the inconvenient facts for people who don't, for whatever reason, like I say, these people are very strange. The sort of ideologically, they hate electric vehicles. It's one of the arguments totally dismantled against them. But what can you do? Let's take a look at some incentives around the world, and Oregon's short-term reopening of their EV rebate program will temporarily reactivate their clean vehicle rebate program for EVs this spring. Haven't got an exact amount on what this is in Oregon, couldn't find that, but I did find the dates for you. If you're in the area, April 3rd to June 3rd, applicable exclusively to EVs purchased or leased within that time frame. A limited time opportunity for buyers and lessees to receive those extra state rebates. Let's talk about what the car industry will look like in the future. And I mentioned Fisker earlier. They may not make it. They might. We hope they do. But I mentioned Nissan as well, a possible investor. Some companies will grow. Some will look different in the future because of the move to electrification. Nissan, of course, have long had a long-standing alliance with Renault, Nissan, Mitsubishi. And that alliance, most known, I suppose, under Carlos Ghosn and what he did there to bring that alliance together. Well, Nissan's now exploring a collaboration with Honda. They've recently renegotiated that deal with Renault and that alliance and the ownership structure between those companies, allowing all of them to do slightly different things going forward. So Nissan may collaborate with Honda to strengthen their position in the EV sector, forming a significant alliance within Japan to compete with not only their local competitors, Toyota, and also global EV leaders like BYD in China, with a potential cooperation might involve joint procurement of EV parts and sharing key components or even software across electric vehicles. In Honda's and Nissan's discussions at Nissan are still in the preliminary phase. Honda's perspective on the partnership has not been disclosed. Both companies have been independently enhancing their EV capabilities, with Nissan collaborating, of course, with Renault, Mitsubishi over the years, Honda partnering with Sony for the weird Aphelia car, and General Motors, of course, on EV development for the Prologue. The upcoming Nissan Electric Micra, for instance, uses the same platform as the Renault 5, which we've seen recently and is pretty damn amazing. So we'll see what shape the car industry takes going forward. But no doubt EVs are changing so much. Bit of charging news next. I think 3 or 4 more stories we've got time for today. Let's talk Wallbox then, unveiling Pulsar Pro for shared EV charging in North America. Wallbox announcing the commencement of Pulsar Pro and the deliveries of these Wallboxes and enhancing EV charging with they're building on their Pulsar Plus model, very, very popular model, introducing features aimed at charging in communal settings. So key features like RFID for user authentication, dynamic power sharing up to 50 units, and compatibility with OCPP, the Open Charge Point Protocol, for commercial applications. It's also prepped for ISO 15118, the standard there, and ensuring secure and advanced charging and payment. The My Wallbox portal offers businesses the ability to manage them with tools. The charging stations can be managed, remote control, payment, access, and things like that. And also the analytics involved and partnering on the API side of it for custom software integrations as well. I get so excited about stuff like this, which is, obviously I'm just a loser that likes talking about how we solve these kind of problems. But, we almost moved house solely to get a driveway to charge our EV on. We didn't. I mean, it was five, six years ago. But that was one of the bonuses of moving house. We parked our car on the street before, and now we have a driveway, lots of off-road parking where we are. And we've got the two EVs that we can charge. We've lived in apartments and over the years, so I've got some experience of parking underground and working with, management committees. And sometimes it's people who own or the the leaseholds or the freeholds in the flat. Sometimes it's an external agency sometimes. And this is a fabulously complex problem to solve. How many car chargers do we put into apartment buildings and complexes? Is it one per space? Is it on a pole between two spaces, with two cables going into them? Is it five parking spaces with chargers and you just park there when you are charging and then you don't? But if it's slow charging overnight, you can argue, well, every space should have a charger. And then how do we do the billing? Look, a lot of the thinking and software and solutions for stuff like, how do we have an RFID tag on our key ring and that will bill our home electricity and stuff like that? A lot of that's already been done. It's all kind of set up and working in many places, or at least it's ready to roll out in new installations. And so I love thinking about this and how we get those people who will charge overnight, slow charge every day, their car's at 100% or 90%, whatever it is in the morning. They haven't got to go find somewhere to fast charge for 20 minutes before they come home again. These people need thinking about so much. A lot of good work is being done. A lot still to do, though. The other subject I get really excited about is wireless EV charging. Now, it hasn't caught on yet because, let's face it, doing this, taking a charger off, a plug off the wall and plugging it into your car, it's about 4 seconds, is not the most onerous of things when you get home from work, but there's like a little mind worm that I've got that thinks wireless charging somehow, somewhere has got to be really useful. The same way that we do with our mobile phones, we will do with cars. This Electrek article pointing out that Oak Ridge National Laboratory has been testing their wireless charging at 100 kilowatts. 100 kilowatts wireless charging, 96% efficient. That's more efficient than plugging in. This is why it blows my mind, because that's more efficient in terms of electricity transmission than plugging in a physical piece of cable, a physical piece of copper from one socket to another. And this is transmitting it through several inches of air, like a 5-inch air gap. It's just mind-blowing. I love this technology. Yes, this was a prototype on a Hyundai Kona. They had this working on with a 5-inch air gap and rotating magnetic fields, working in a way that managed to charge this up to 100 kilowatts. On the test bench, it was 120 kilowatts. Now, whether that is a taxi rank outside a train station or an airport where a taxi is perhaps in the queue for 4, 5, 10 minutes, gradually shuffling forward in the queue, if they have a row of these under the concrete and they're just driving forwards, they join the back of the queue and 10 minutes later they're at the front to get their next passenger and their car's fully charged, that would be amazing. And so there's got to be somewhere, somehow, wireless will take off. But hey, we'll wait and see. And finally, I've not talked about this story for the last week, even though it's been absolutely everywhere, because something didn't feel right about it. So, it was in all the mainstream newspapers, their website versions, obviously, because no one reads newspapers anymore. Because, obviously, those businesses, any business, any YouTuber, any blogger, anyone that relies on clicks, and I don't. I've got the Patreon that funds this podcast, pays my wages, and that's great, because I'm not desperate for clickbait. I don't need to go out there and do clickbaity titles and do, clickbait videos about, this next sort of great technology or whatever. So I need to do that, which is great. And I don't like stuff like that anyway. I wouldn't do it. And so I saw this story, which of course is like catnip to the mainstream media. A Jaguar I-Pace driver claimed last week that they couldn't slow their car down and that they needed the help of local police to slow them down. He had a Jaguar I-Pace, and he was reaching speeds of up to 100 miles an hour. Although he said in an interview with one of the YouTube channels that I like to watch, what's that called? Guy Buys Cars or Guy Drives Cars. He interviewed this chap for like half an hour, and he said, I was doing 90 and 100. And you listen. I did listen to the whole interview, a telephone conversation that this YouTuber had with this driver. And there were so many bits of the story that, as an EV driver, as someone who's covered the EV industry for years, it just didn't. It didn't sound right. And now he's been arrested. Now he could just be arrested to be interviewed under caution, and I don't know if he's been charged with, very different thing, charged with this. But I know he's been arrested, and so we'll be careful what we say from now on out because of the way that we have to be careful. So This driver claimed that his vehicle malfunctioned, that he joined the motorway, and that the car accelerated on its own. But he was never clear in the interview that he gave. He was never clear about whether the throttle was all the way down or whether it was partway down. He claimed he was pushing the brake very hard, but the car didn't slow down at all. He was caught by police doing it like 90 miles an hour. He said in the interview that I listened to that he was on the phone to the police, because he called the police. Oh, my car is malfunctioning. I can't slow down. It's not like the car mat has got stuck on the accelerator pedal. My car's not slowing down. And they said, well, okay, we'll try and, in the Jaguar I-Pace, it's buttons. So it's not a rotating thing or a gear shift. It's buttons. We had an I-Pace HSE, and I loved that vehicle, by the way. And I never had any problems with my Jaguar, with the Jaguar I-Pace that we had. And he said, oh, I'm pushing the neutral button, but it's not going into neutral. But then I pushed it really, really hard, and it went into neutral. Well, that's just not the way that microswitches work underneath the button. He said he was doing 90 miles an hour. Well, actually, that car... top speed's 124 mile an hour. Top. There's bits of the story that were true. He said he left work with 60 miles range, and after doing 100 miles an hour on the motorway and the police catching him and stuff, it was down to 20 miles. And that makes sense. Like, all of those things, bits of the story didn't add up in terms of the distance travelled at 120 miles an hour. Either way, the police had to... They blocked him in and slowed him down by him ramming the police car. And as you can imagine, every EV hater... just everyone who has eyeballs wanted to click on this story and then say, EVs are dangerous, they're runaways. But that's not the way that EVs work. And once Jaguar Land Rover got involved and the police did their investigation on the vehicle, it's just not the way that the electronics work and the overrides that are all in there, the safety of an electric vehicle, that if you depress the brake, it's going to slow the vehicle down. I've seen people in the comments of other videos being like, I've heard stories about I-Paces. And you think, well, how much of this is the internet? And has this chap led us up the garden path? Or did he genuinely have a very serious problem and was lucky to escape with, just having to do this? So... we don't know. Either way, I've resisted talking about it and giving you my opinion for almost a week now, but the news breaking today that he has been indeed arrested by the police. Can't wait to find out the full story in the fullness of time, but that's what it's all about, isn't it? We'll let the system do its thing. Well, thanks so much for listening to the podcast today. I really appreciate it. As always, if you watch the video version on YouTube, give us a thumbs up if you like the show, and it really, you know what it's like with the algorithm. It just helps other people find EV news and spreads the good news about electric vehicles. And make sure you're subscribed to the channel. Same for the audio version of the podcast. It's free and always will be, but if you'd like it ad-free, you can become one of our Patreon legends at patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. And a daily mention for our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie, and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel, Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and lease plan electric moments. All the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good one. I'll see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.